fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Insight Fire Training, LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighting cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2019 Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5-Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training, LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography Certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training, LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, 2019 would be the year to do it. Here's their upcoming schedule. January 10th, Tactical TIC Training with Max Firebox at Oak Grove Volunteer Fire Department. February 2nd, the 2019 Midwinter's Chiefs Conference Tactical Thermal Imaging Lecture. February 6th through the 8th, the Texas Association of Fire Educators with Sean Blomaker of Max Firebox. More details to follow. February 12th, Tactical Thermal Imaging, Enhancing Fireground Strategies and Tactics, sponsored by FD Tactics Training. Details to follow. February 28th, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., it's the Max Firebox Burn and Learn Thermal Imaging Training at Mount Pleasant Volunteer Fire Department in North Carolina with instructors Terrence Shoemate and Thomas Anderson. Details to follow. March 6th through the 9th, the Louisiana Instructors and Firefighters Training Conference. Registration open November 1st. Brotherhood on the Bayou will host some amazing fire service leaders, Mike Dugan, Mark Von Appen, Sean Blomaker, and Andy of Max Firebox and KTF. Don't miss this one. We will be teaching 7 4-hour sessions from 6th to the 9th. April 9th through the 13th at FDIC 2019, a general conference presentation that will cover the often confusing and complex areas of thermal imaging from purchasing to policy. This is not a sales presentation. It is an educational program that is designed to assist firefighters in understanding the specifications of fire service thermal imaging camera and how that will affect their ability to perform on the fire ground. May 10th through 12th, the West Virginia Public Safety Expo. Insight Training will conduct an 8-hour live fire training event where students will compete various scenario objectives. July 2019, the TEX 2019. Details to follow. August, the North Carolina SAFRE Conference in Raleigh. Live fire, 8-hour tactical TIC training, tentative. And December 19th, Springfield, Ohio, IAFF Firefighters Conference, tentative. Remember, Insight Training, LLC, your best bet for TIC training. we want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great promotional partners, the Firehouse Tribune. The Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on duty and off, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of 5 Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. I'm your host, Steve Green. We hope you're all well, and we're very happy to have you with us listening to another episode of 5 Alarm Task Force. We want to remind you, you can find this podcast and all our podcasts, our entire library, on our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and whoever your favorite podcast aggregator is, you'll probably find us there. Just remember to search for 5 Alarm Task Force. And please, when you visit our homepage, you can sign up to get our newsletter. No, we don't send spam. We don't send it every day. It comes out maybe once every few weeks. Just put in your email, and we'll put you on the list, and we'll get you the next one out there, get you all the news from Dalmatian Productions, 5 Alarm Task Force, our blog posts, etc. And if you do listen to us on iTunes, please do us a favor and give us 5 stars in the rating, because that will help us get a higher rating from iTunes and will help people searching for us find us that much more quickly. And if you'd like to share your interest with us or with others, drop by our storefront, especially now it's the holiday season. You're looking to find a gift, but how do you give money for gifts and spend money maybe for good causes? Well, guess what? We have the answer for you. Go to see our storefront with our friends from Teespring. Go to bit.ly/Dalmat store and choose from several t-shirts and mugs. And remember, a portion of the net proceeds goes to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and I'm happy and proud to say that we just sent them last week a check for $50, thanks to you, our listeners. My guest tonight is a good friend of the podcast. He's a returning guest, probably one of the most well-known educators and chiefs in the business, and we're very lucky that he has the time and has taken the time to join us this evening, and we welcome Chief Dennis Rubin. Chief Dennis L. Rubin was appointed the first chief of fire and EMS for Upper Merion Township in September of this year, 2018. His experience spans more than 30 years in the fire service. He has served as a line firefighter, company officer, command officer, and chief of the department in several major U.S. cities. In 1994, Chief Rubin was the president of the State Fire Chiefs Association of Virginia. He hosted the 1999 Southeastern Fire Chiefs Association Conference held in Dothan, Alabama. He was appointed to several committees with the International Association of Fire Chiefs, including a 2-year term as the Safety Committee and Program Committee Chair. Chief Rubin is the ad hoc co-chair for the Wing Spread Conferences. And if you've been a regular listener to us, you know that we had a wonderful podcast with him and the late Chief Alan Brunicini. Chief Rubin's educational accomplishments include a Bachelor of Science degree in Fire Administration from the University of Maryland and an Associate's in Applied Science degree in Fire Science Management from the Northern Virginia Community College. Chief Rubin is a graduate of the National Fire Academy Executive Fire Officer Program and the Naval Postgraduate School's Executive Leadership Course in Homeland Security. He is a Certified Emergency Manager and a Certified Incident Safety Officer, as well as having obtained the Chief Fire Officer Designation and the Chief Medical Officer Designation bestowed by the Center for Public Safety Excellence. Rubin's teaching credentials are significant. He is an adjunct faculty member with several state fire rescue training agencies and at the National Fire Academy. He is a popular lecturer at local, state, national, and international venues. He has been a member of 7 National Fire Academy course development teams. Included among the development teams that he has served on are Incident Command, Infection Control for the Fire Service and Tactical Operations. He is the author of several emergency service books. His first release is entitled Rooms, Rules for Survival. This book is a collection of case studies dealing with the important topic of firefighter safety. The next book that he released was Rooms, Rules for Leadership. The chief discusses his 13 core values and describes how each can be applied to improve one's personal leadership capabilities. His third book was DC Fire, which was released at the Fire Department Instructors Conference, FDIC, by Fire Engineering Books. And finally, his most recent book, It's Always About Leadership, which was also published by Fire Engineering Books. Chief Rubin contributes to several fire rescue service publications and has written more than 200 technical articles relating to fire rescue department operations, administration, training, and safety. Chief Dennis Rubin has 3 grown children and 1 grandson, the lucky guy. Dennis loves being outdoors and is an avid sports fan, especially if he's listening to a Caps game while you're talking with him, supporting all of his hometown professional teams. Follow him on Twitter at Chief Rubin, or find him on Facebook at DC Fire, or contact him by email at chiefrubin@me.com. Chief, it is a pleasure to welcome you back to the show.
Wow, what a great introduction, Steve. I truly appreciate that. And if you'll say it along with me, let's go Caps.
Let's go Caps. That's right. Let's go Caps. Well, it's good to have you back. And you chose a great topic. And as we discussed just before we went on the air, it's a topic that I have not heard in my, not only in my 2.5 years doing the podcast, but I haven't heard in my entire time since I joined the department. But I think it's a great title. It's called The Career Crusher. Why don't you tell our listeners what we're talking about, sir, please?
Yes, sir. I've had a chance to work in several fire departments, as you mentioned. I've been described as having gypsy blood. So as I've moved about, we've had some regular ongoing issues in terms of behaviors with the firefighters. And of course, it would be time to figure out what the appropriate discipline would be,
right?
Whether it was a DUI or perhaps even worse. And it dawned on me, it came to me very, very clear that if I took the collection of regular occurring major negative events and I packaged it into a presentation and I worked with our labor union, our volunteer membership, our regular membership, everybody and anybody that would hear the message, maybe instead of having to dish out discipline, it would look a lot more like an understanding and a opportunity not to step into a deep hole.
Sure.
If you've been in the responsibility, as the folks that are out there listening, it's never fun to be the person that has to take care of the disciplinary process. It's tedious. It's long. Most times it'll probably end up in a court setting if you take away a person's job. It's stressful. There's just not a winner in there. And
right.
Of course, the poor member who has to suffer through all of that embarrassment and reputation destruction and things like that. Well, maybe it's a better way. Maybe the better way, Steve, is to openly talk about what you can't do and make it a point to describe what's going to happen if you do it. And then, of course, hopefully the behavior doesn't ever present itself, and it does, if it does, rather be ready to implement that discipline.
Sure.
It took a long time to put the presentation together. I like to say I'm an overnight success. It was about a 30-year effort to put together what the crushers look like and how to avoid them. And it really seemed like what I'm going to describe, sir, as a common sense approach.
Okay, that sounds good. And I think having been in a position in my civilian job where I did have to look after employees and had to deal with a couple with some certain infractions that were against the policies, the SOGs, we can say, even though it was a civilian situation, I know exactly where you're coming from. And it is difficult. It's difficult for the one doing the discipline, and it's like hell for the person sitting in that chair opposite the desk.
Yes, sir. And you know, the members, generally speaking, made one major mistake. I want it to be very clear. If you're rubbing a curb with a fire truck or backing into the bay door or coming 10 minutes late, That is not what we're talking about. But if you did a really stupid event, for instance, seriously harmed your spouse or found yourself on the wrong end of a DUI, that's what this presentation has been about. That's the focus, to have an open and frank and honest discussion and say, if you do A, I've got to do B. The general rule has always been that discipline has got to do the most good for the organization. The most good for the organization in my world is defined, we've got to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it should go on to do the least amount of damage to the member. So again, not trying to give folks a free pass, but do the minimal amount of damage to the member and their reputation. But you got to fix the problem. And when you put yourself in a position where you've been involved, for instance, in criminal activity, you outperform the ability of the organization to keep you employed.
Certainly. Certainly. So let's discuss, you brought up a couple of simple examples, possible DUI or spousal abuse. So let's talk about what happens. You're told that Jimmy Smith report comes in. It's followed by a police notes, police report. And Jimmy Smith's had a little too much at the party, the retirement party for Bill Jones. And he was stopped and he didn't pass the test. So what happens at that point?
Well, yes, sir. Of course, we're going to go through some of the things that members shouldn't do later. But in an overview in general terms, first and foremost, once we're advised, and it would be really appropriate if the member self-reported, mm-hmm. that starts the process of being truthful and standing upright and doing, you know, the right thing, even though it's probably hard to do. But a thorough investigation would follow according to the level and type of situation that a member's in would dictate what their status is going to be. If it were a criminal act, or, for instance, if someone has been arrested and arraigned for spousal abuse, most likely they're going to be placed in some type of a leave status that usually is on the member and not on the organization. I would caution everybody, though, most states in this nation have a firefighter bill of rights, which can do and which can't do when it comes to discipline. So I would defer always to make certain that you consult with the bill of rights. You should at this point get your HR department, your human resource department directly involved, and of course, seek legal counsel if necessary. Once that happens and the investigation were to be found that it is in fact did occur, perhaps the member has been very direct and has aligned with what the police report says, and then the appropriate measure of discipline. Some agencies allow a peer review so that your peer is deciding what level or measure of discipline. Some have a trial board process. Some have a table. And I'm kind of in the school of having a table that describes, if you do X, we're going to do Y. And again, as a company officer, as a battalion chief officer, and I was so lucky to get to serve in both roles, it's easy to sit down with the member and say, okay, if you do this behavior on or off duty, here's what the results are going to be, and here's what the organization's going to do to you. So that was always really direct, and again, hit a person upside the head almost, not literally, but figuratively,
right, sure.
With the facts of the circumstance. And then, you know, with the presentations, what I've tried to do is to capture some headlines, to take information that has been on the internet, whether it's on the secret list or other sources that constantly are producing and providing information, vital information to firefighters about negative behavior. Sometimes it's positive, but most frankly, let's face it, it's typically salacious negative behaviors that the member should not have been involved in at all.
True. You know, you brought something up that was really important, I think. And it was the fact that if a member comes to his or her chief officer with the mea culpa, I did this, I apologize, that carries a lot of positive weight for that person to accept the responsibility of their act. And hopefully that will allow some sort of leniency in the way the department can deal with him or her.
It may. And again, some progressive departments have that as a requirement. When you find yourself in a situation, the expectation is that you would do that self-reporting. So I applaud the departments that do that. I happen to have worked for one, and once the member realizes that the organization is going to find out about it, probably coming clean on the front end is a pretty important part in the process. And again, as you say, it may, not guaranteeing, but it right. may lend itself to be a little bit more lenient. Of course, my hope, my prayer, my belief is if a member is armed with all the information that we're going to discuss tonight, all they have to do is to simply behave. And I know sometimes it's tough to do, but boy, being self-disciplined by far is the best discipline that a member can possibly have.
Certainly.
It lowers the stress and blood pressure of those that are in controlling positions. And again, the member never, I don't think, would ever have to worry about being in a position where they might lose their position.
Well, that sounds good. And I think that's the best way to go. So let's go down,
yes, sir.
Go down the presentation, and we'll follow you.
Absolutely, Steve. The first one that I'd like to talk about is never inflict any type of revenge. Most organizations have a pretty bold and straightforward and harsh statement about if there's any retaliation, whether it's getting somebody back that did something off the job, maybe it was domestic related. Romance sometimes happens in and out of the fire stations, and we all know that. But just when you think, I'm going to get this person, I'm going to harm him, I'm really going to embarrass that person, I'm going to embarrass him on the internet, I'm going to embarrass him at work, and as you're inflicting that revenge, there's probably some type of discipline headed your way. I've seen organizations that have actually used a discipline process to inflict revenge, or maybe it's a job assignment. So, Steve, I know that you live on the northeast side of town, and I'm going to send you as far to the west side of town as I possibly can. I'm going to make sure your life is miserable every second, and then I'm going to be silly enough to vocalize that fact. Well, again, that looks a lot like revenge, or maybe I withhold a promotion, even though the promotion has been earned, or a pay increase, or flat out, maybe I'm going to embarrass you, as it were. So any of those inflicting revenge, it might feel good while you're doing it, but generally speaking, it's going to end up coming back to bite you. And especially if you're in a position that has even a little bit more power than the other person, if it's a power-driven situation, where I've got one more toilet plunger. Oh, wait a minute. You'll probably call them speaking trumpets, but I've got one more speaking trumpet on my collar than you do. And boy, I'm just going to make it miserable. We watch a lot of, I'm going to call them soap operas for lack of a better. They come on Wednesday nights. You can fill in the blanks. I do enjoy the stories, but they're fantasy, but it talks about a particular police department and a particular fire department. And they're loaded with this revenge behavior. So absolutely against all good policy in any organization.
Well, that's why I hope I already shared the copy of the pilot script with you. If I haven't, I'll get it out to you, and you'll see that there could be a show about the fire service that tells it like it really is, not like the fantasies that we see on television on Wednesday nights.
I agree, and you know, it's hard to capture sometimes, and you really have got to be an insider to capture it all, and I appreciate the preparation and the work that you've done. The next career crusher looks like discrimination and or harassment of any kind. If you discriminate or harass because of color, race, creed, age, religion, gender, sexual orientation, demonstrate bullying behavior, you probably are not going to be employed very long. But even more importantly for the person that is inflicting that type of discrimination and or harassment, there's law that's even a bigger picture as to why you got to behave. And, you know, nowadays, you can't make flippant comments. You can't say, boy, I live in a politically correct community, and therefore I can't say what's on my mind. Well, the reality of it is, if you think, and especially if you're attempting to inflict harm or embarrassment, and you know it's wrong on the front end, that behavior is going to get you in hot water as sure as we're talking on your radio show.
Right. There's no doubt about that.
I've had a chance, again, perfected over a period of time, to put together a poster, and I'll get the poster if we can get it to your website.
Sure.
It just goes over what you can't do. And again, if it would be something that would embarrass your mother or your father or your husband or your wife, and they would tell you probably don't do it, well, take the advice and do not engage in that type of behavior.
Good point. Got to think twice.
Yes, sir. Inattention to detail would be my next crusher. Now, by no means am I talking about maybe coming to work late or forgetting to fill out a single form. I'm talking about something that is significant, that is a constant inability to be able to perform, and I'm going to call it death by a thousand paper cuts, just simply not paying attention to what that person is supposed to be doing. Maybe you've had two or three significant vehicle crashes, and it's pretty obvious you're not paying attention. Or maybe you're a company officer and you've gone to two or three fires where you failed to follow the policy, perhaps didn't lay a supply line or advance an attack line. And as those begin to back up, it becomes a significant enough event where, boy, pay attention to detail. Make sure that you do the job correctly. And remember, you're accountable. You're accountable as a firefighter, as a company officer, as a chief officer. And certainly the community, the elected body, always holds the fire chief accountable, and they quite frankly should. So I would say to spend a minute to make sure that you're paying attention to all of the details as much as you possibly can. All of the time is important. I got just a little vignette I'd love to share if we have
Please.
The time about that.
Certainly.
I had a chance to be working in a major metropolitan city that calls itself the New York City of the South. That's right. It would be Atlanta. And I got a message from the administrative assistant that the mayor was going to have a cabinet meeting. Mayors, typically a strong form of government, describes their department heads as cabinet officers, and I happen to be the cabinet officer representing the fire chief, also known as the chief of the department. Well, the request was to go to the Georgia Aquarium for this meeting, and the aquarium was under construction at the time, and it seemed like it was going to be a cabinet meeting that was a gee whiz meeting. I hate to say it that way. I hope my former boss, the mayor of Atlanta at the time, is not listening, because she'd probably be mad at me. And thinking it was going to be a gee whiz meeting, I looked at all the work that I had to do. It was close to budget time. I had employee evaluations to do. We were developing a bidding system for firefighters to be able to work towards their assignment based on seniority. And I could go on, but I had a desk full. And the chief of staff was a captain at the time, and he popped his head in and said, you know, we got to get over to the aquarium. You got to be at the cabinet meeting, as he always did. Really good guy. Thank goodness he was there that day. And I shared with him, you know, Bill, I'm not going to be able to make it. I know I've got to finish this paperwork. I know the budget is waiting. And he says, nah, you've got to go to the mayor's cabinet meeting. And I sent him away. I pretty much said, I'm not going to make it. Well, a few more minutes later, he popped in and he said, I've come up with a compromise. Get in the car. We'll go to the aquarium. We'll go to the door that you're supposed to meet mayor and the rest of the staff. Say hello. Let her check you off her list. Go out the side door. I'll be waiting for you, and we'll be back to the office in no time. And I, for whatever reason, thank goodness I accepted that plan. So when we got there, in essence, the mayor gets there, and there's no one there but her and myself. I got to meet Bernie Marcus, if you're familiar with that name. He is the owner of that aquarium and also built Home Depot. And as we went to the very top floor during the construction, there was a conference room. And in that conference room was about a dozen different consultants that were engineering, architects, and design people. And they had the seven phases of opening up this major aquarium attraction and how that they would need temporary certificates of occupancy and what I needed to do and that I needed to check off. The entire meeting wasn't about the cabinet. It was only about the fire department and what the chief had to do to keep this project online. I'm convinced that if I'd have missed a meeting, especially to work on something as mundane as a budget or to work towards an agreement with our labor group, which was important to me. But again, that day, it was the mayor's time to shine. And thank God that I followed up. And again, I got to admit, it wasn't me. It was the captain that day. But that attention to detail, if I would have been a little bit more inattentive, that most likely would have cost me my job.
Mm-hmm. That's a great story. And I think and I hope that people can learn from it, because those of us who have been in that kind of a position, whether it's in the fire service or in civilian work, you have to know that there's a time when you have to get up away from your desk and your obligations and answer the number one call, and that's to the boss.
I couldn't agree more. And again, I learned a lot that day, and I'll forever be thankful to the captain that insisted that I do it. And boy, was he just right on track, needless to say.
He was a smart guy.
The next one I would say would be to watch your personal life. Don't let it get out of balance. And I'm going to start by saying part of keeping your life in balance is what I'm going to call your zipper or button management. Zipper typically for men, buttons typically for women. And, you know, having any relations that we're describing on duty is usually the end of the line. And having relations that will just generally get you in trouble, perhaps it's something that's involving other people who might already be married, and I could go on, but that would be a absolute personal life out of balance issue.
Sure.
Compulsions are another big part. Gamblers, get help. Don't wait until they come and repossess your car or your home and garnish your wages and go through that embarrassment. I don't know that there would be much actionable from the fire department side unless, working in several larger departments, several members had to keep security clearances, and that would be the first thing that would have been revoked, which would have cost them their job. I don't have to describe substance abuse. Of course, that's completely out of bounds. And it was interesting. The places that I've been were relatively on a liberal scale, more than not. And they were pretty willing to let a member self-identify and get into a treatment plan one time and not hold it against the person. The organization was not to know. The simple fact is that they would get 28 days of leave to go through the 28-day program and then return to duty. And once they returned to duty, they would be on a close testing cycle. But ultimately, the goal was to put that person in a position that they were no longer slave to the substances that cause us problems. The other side of that is if you got caught with a random drug test, if you had a post-accident, as in a vehicle accident, for instance, exposure, or any other mechanism that would cause you to be drug tested, and that was discovered, well, that would be the end of the line. You would not be able to survive that. That would be termination on the spot. And we opened up with a quick discussion before you make some great comments about spousal and children abuse. I had one case where after verified, the member didn't get out of jail before he was terminated, did the shaking baby syndrome on about a four-month-old child.
Oh my God.
So there's no way that you can even possibly consider that behavior being acceptable or something that you can work out of. So again, that is how this program was put together, is looking at people's major mistakes and recognizing, boy, we got to do better, Steve.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, people, the citizens hold us to a very high regard. We're lucky for that. Because in most people's eyes, even if they don't know us, we're the heroes. And as your dear late friend and our great mentor, Chief Brunasinghe, said, we go and help them on their worst day. Even if that worst day for them is just the cat up the tree, we still have to go and do that. And so when we do that, people look at us like we're the heroes, like we're wearing the cape and have the big letter on our chest. And for us to do, to cross the line, and it gets out into the press, it doesn't just hurt that one member. It tarnishes the badge for every one of us. I think that's what hurts the most.
And I could not agree more. And I would just add to that, you got to consider what's called the public trust. Mm-hmm. And we have earned the public trust for the most part. And I think there's very few organizations that have not done that. And I'm talking over decades and maybe even millennium. Well, it's so easy to lose that public trust. And when you do something, activities that either are criminal or borderline criminal, it's very difficult for that family to allow you into their home, for instance. Maybe grandma is having chest pains and needs to be transported to the hospital. And perhaps she's home alone. Perhaps all the family's valuables are in the room that she's in. So again, if the fire department has a reputation not to have the public trust, well, I don't have to tell you. And then even more importantly, when we look at the delivery of medical service and medical care, any good paramedic or emergency medical technician would describe the fact that to do a full and complete survey of the patient's injuries, you have to expose and explore. Bottom line is you have to look for exit wounds as well as the obvious entrance wounds. And if you're in a position where you have done something wrong towards society, pedophile or other sexual deviant behavior, for instance, it's going to be hard to explain that you cut the clothes off of a child in an automobile wreck for the right reasons. Now, of course, the hope is that the department would never let the department get into that position. Right. They would have taken action. But protecting, defending that public trust, there is nothing more sacred in our business and nothing more important in our business. And I know that's right where you were headed.
Absolutely. I know that every time I read one of the trade journals or even in the newspaper and I see that a volunteer firefighter, for example, was arrested in such and such a place for starting fires. And when they questioned him, he said, yeah, we weren't going enough calls, so I want to get some calls for us. I can't think of anything worse that that person could have done in light of who he or she was representing and who we are as an organization across the country. To know
couldn't agree more. Again, totally failed the public trust.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So where do we go from here, Chief? What are we looking at, and how do we, and maybe we'll do the next segment, but how do we convey, now you have the poster you mentioned, but let's say emotionally and on an intellectual level, how do we convey these great points that you've brought up to our members?
You know, again, I can only describe what's worked for me. And that is, I do have a handy dandy PowerPoint. And quite frankly, I'm referring to that as we speak.
That's fine.
And to have an open and honest and frank discussion about the things that'll seriously get you in trouble. I think that's the beginning. And when you can begin, unfortunately, I had enough case study. When you can begin to tie that case study to a firefighter on a particular shift, if you will, or in a particular company, won't need to mention names because everybody there will know the names and talk about exactly what happened. Again, not trying to be mean-spirited or disparaging towards the member, but saying, you know, we will have and we will maintain, and discipline is and will always be important to this organization as well as the public trust. To me, I think that's a really good point. That's a really good starting place. Probably if you were to say you had all the ability to make change and to do the right thing in the world, the first place, the first stop I would suggest would have to be in the hiring process. Hire only those people with clean backgrounds You know, I constantly are sending out notes and reminding folks that they really can hire idiots or thugs or military misfits. Now, before I go much further with my little reminder about never hire an idiot, never hire a thug, never hire a military misfit, I got to give the first two to Gordon Graham. I said in a presentation, and as he is just as animated and wonderful as he is, he says, if you do hire an idiot, if you do hire a thug, just never forget the fact they will never, ever let you down. And it took a minute for that to soak in. And of course, what he was saying is, they'll always be idiots. They'll always be thugs. They will always be military misfits. There is a really interesting case study, and the case study comes out of Rampart, California. And that is a real place. It wasn't just in the movies. And the Rampart district that he was very familiar with, as he told some of the information, they had continued to lower the standards in L.A. Police Department to hire the number of police officers that they were behind. And they just kept lowering the standard and lowering the standard and lowering the standard until they picked up folks of really unsavory character. And, you know, they ultimately, the government ultimately paid the price because they ended up being the people that were doing nefarious things, the police. So you get the idea. Again, I would say train your folks, make sure it's an important part of the process, have a fair, balanced, and reasonable disciplinary system. Couple that with, if you can, hire the right folks in the first place. And again, when you show up in an organization that, you know, in a few places like Washington, 2,500 strong, and every position was filled when I got there, well, I'm not going to have the ability to pick any people until there's vacancies. So, again, that would be the advice I would give.
Okay. Sounds great. All right, folks, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back with Chief Rubin, we're going to talk more about not being the career crusher, how to avoid that situation. We'll be right back right after these words. Please don't go away. No matter where we live, or no matter the season, there is always work to be done that makes us sweat. Just how can we keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel and pre-moistened with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Just open your cool towel pack, remove the towel and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neck like a kerchief. Wipe your face, arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times again, and Cool Towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your Cool Towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your Cool Towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your cool towel today, visit www.cooltowel.com or call 1-800-918-8323. Remember, you're going to work and you're going to sweat. Make Cool Towel your answer to keeping cool. The tones sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. That was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on. You're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the red crosslay, and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy's behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on.
Okay, so 5 5 tacos with cheese and a large soda. That's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And our guest is a good friend of the podcast who is returning to us once again out of the kindness of his heart and his generosity of his time. And that's Chief Dennis L. Rubin, currently the chief in, I got to remember, Chief of Fire and EMS for Upper Marion Township, which is in northern Montgomery County and outside of the city of Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. And we're talking about his guide to how not to be a career crusher, or as he said it so succinctly, don't be the one that when the fire service tabloids ask, what were they thinking? So what we've heard so far in our first segment was right on the mark. You don't want to be the one doing that and that everybody else finds out about it. So, Chief, where do we go from here?
Well, you know, I think a quote by Colin Powell is so much in order. And General Powell wrote an amazing book, and I would recommend everybody listening to do your best to get your hands on it. And it's called My American Journey. He's one of my favorites. What a leader. What a patriot. What a great field commander. Quite frankly, I don't want to get political, but I really still wish he would run for president. I know that's not in the cards.
Amen
to
that.
But in General Powell's, yes, sir, in General Powell's book, he says that you should always do the right thing. And he goes on to say, do the right thing when no one is watching. And the idea is, if you do the right thing when you strongly believe no one is watching, well, of course, when someone is watching, you'll always do the right thing. And then in General's book, he goes on to describe, and let's face it, somebody is always watching. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal, and I generally don't. It's a little funny, little quip. I generally don't read the Wall Street Journal, but I found myself flying from Seattle to Anchorage, Alaska. So I'll give a shout out to my friends way, way out west. And as I'm flying and there's nothing left to read or write, the battery's out on the computer. I've been flying from the East Coast all day long. In the seat back pocket was that Wall Street Journal. And it had an article about folks and their images being captured on closed circuit television. And at the time, it was something like 40 or 50 times every day, on average, an American citizen lights up a closed circuit camera. And it did say, if you live in a small, desolate, you know, sparsely populated rural community of farmland, a township of, you know, 200 people or something, probably a lot less. But if you lived in New York City or any other urbanized area, you can probably double it. So I think what the general said, wow, had just so much meaning. And this was before the days of everybody having a cell phone.
Sure.
Because let's face it, everybody has now become a reporter, as it were. So again, somebody is always watching.
Absolutely. Yeah, I call them sidewalk reporters when Periscope comes up with these fire calls.
Yes, sir. The next crusher that would ruin a person's career is that their actions are not aligned with the departmental goals. We find ourselves in a position where firefighters want to be led by example. They don't want to see folks generally violate the policies that they have to enforce. In other words, when a person says, look, do what I tell you, not what I do, you've lost all credibility and your actions are no longer aligned. Wear your seatbelt, and it's the officer that doesn't even think about a seatbelt. Mm-hmm. I worked with a couple of much older officers a long time ago, and they really did not like the confines of an air pack. But, you know, thank goodness, and I still appreciate, and they've all passed, is that they would insist that we would wear air packs, we, their company members. And I often thought about that action, and why, but I can't describe it. I can't explain why they were so adamant about it. But I think by today's standards, their actions would be totally misaligned. And once you're no longer aligned with the goals of the department, I think the likelihood becomes that there could be a career crusher. You know, when we have functional traditions, standing and saluting or facing the flag or saying the Pledge of Allegiance, that's some pretty great stuff.
Absolutely.
Now, being misaligned, there's been some traditions and functional traditions that should be changed, that do have problems, that do send all kinds of mixed messages. The one I really enjoyed hearing about, Chief Brunicini said it was a self-righting venture. And after this one incident, they had no more trouble in Phoenix. The chief, and I think about him every day, God rest his soul, what Amen. A great person, what a great mentor. Thank you for mentioning his name. I just, again, have a hard time accepting that he's gone.
But I think
he talked
we all
about
do,
a
Chief.
Tradition.
We all
yes,
do.
Yes, sir. He talked about a tradition that he didn't have a handle on until he found out about what was going on, but some of the companies would decide, today is the day that we're going to take a member's pants off, which is silly when you say it. And as that member gets de-pantsed, then they're going to put the trousers in the freezer, wet them, put them in the freezer so the pants are frozen so the person can put them back on. And the chief said, as the three members of an engine company approached their newest member of an engine company, and they talked about they're going to put him on the ground, and, you know, this is just what we do here. The member said, okay, I'm good with that. Now, let me just point out that before I came to work here, and I'm not teasing, I was a Navy SEAL. What I do to you is not going to be pretty, but I'm going to do it in the vein of self-defense. So with that said, let's get started. And all three looked at him and said, you know what? Probably we'd rather go have a dish of ice cream instead. And that was a self-righting piece of information there that really did okay, if you will. It fixed itself.
Sure did.
But that's, again, completely disaligned, misaligned, I guess is a better way of saying it, with the department's goals. One that probably will never go away, and I'm going to give you the exact quote in the newspapers, and that was with the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the same type of dysfunctional tradition. And believe it or not, and I hope you don't have to bleep me, but it was called, written in the paper and in the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the case study was called Scrotum on the Head. What would happen is a member in this, actually it was a Florida fire department,
uh-oh,
was held down, and as the member was held down, each of the crew members then would remove the scrotum part and would rub it all over the face and head of the member in question. Well, that seemingly was something that went on for many years until when they were finished, they would put a spray paint coat of orange on that same part of the member that was being held down. Well, they did well with it until a female member came along. And quite frankly, they held her down. They did just what I described, and I think that behavior was identified as being sexual assault, and then they actually spray painted her genitals as well. The case study, again, don't hesitate to look it up, talk to Siri, get it on the internet, was called Scrotum on the Head. That department, as you read, you can find out which department, but they were, I think, $1.2 million poorer as they had to make the payout to make this person whole. And what a ridiculous case study. And, you know, if you went to your mother, your father, your husband, your wife, your children, your pastor, and said, you know, today at work, I pulled down my pants and I rubbed my genitals on one of my work associates' head and face. I mean, wouldn't you just have to say how ridiculous?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The last quick quip that I'll share is I think everybody saw the case study where the firefighters had been in a position where they were taunting a brand new member in this organization And they did it by having an off-duty member come in with a bandana on his face and a starter pistol. Mm. And he screamed out he wanted wallets and watches and fired the pistol a couple of times. And everybody knew what was going on except for the recruit member. They videotaped it. They had a tape running the whole time. They put the names of the people on the tape, put it on the internet. And, of course, once the chief found out about it, there was heck to pay. I think out of that group of people, two were terminated, two or three were demoted, and everybody except for the member in question that they were taunting got like 10 days off. The member that was being taunted, I think he had to pay an exceptionally high laundry bill that week.
I don't doubt it, but you know what? I laugh at that, but I think what they did is horrible.
And again, the thing for that department and for those members, go ahead and please Google it, but it's very available. I don't think it will ever go away. I know another department adopted it as how to not get a promotion or to be, you know, as their career crusher, in other words. So they use it as a training function in their HR department. And they don't just use it for the firefighters. They use it for all of their government, and it's a large government, to say, look at this silly, ridiculous, unbelievable behavior. I never was able to follow up with what the public perception was, because I'm pretty sure it was out in the public. But I think we lost a lot of credibility and a lot of public trust in that community that day.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt at all.
The next crusher is declining health. Now, let me just say, when a person contracts a disease that they can't manage, boy, I got that. That's one thing. And, you know, you hope that that person comes along and is able to come back whole and get back to work. But when we don't take care of ourselves, when we're not fit for duty, when we're not fit for life, when we're not fit to be a company member, a company officer, or in command, we have got to do something different. We have to have reasonable stamina, reasonable endurance. We have to be physically and mentally fit. And, you know, the program talking about health and wellness always starts off with a discussion about we take better care of our fire trucks than we do of our members. And, you know, what a sad commentary that is. So, again, having a rigorous health and wellness program, members fully participating, getting involved, keeping their wellness as a high priority, all of that is just so very, very, very important.
Absolutely. I've coined the phrase, don't be the first domino. Not the good domino,
right,
but the bad domino, because if you're the guy,
right,
who always wants to charge through the door with the nozzle because it's your ego in the way, and yet you know you have an underlying health problem, there's going to be that one time you charge through that door and you collapse, and everybody, all the dominoes on that fire ground have to change what they were supposed to be doing because of what's happened in that 1 second that you collapsed when you were trying to go through the door, even though you know you shouldn't have even been there at work that day. But the ego,
yes, sir. Yes,
ego,
sir.
Ego got in the way of passion, and now look what happened.
Absolutely. The next crusher, again, and probably aligns more with a leadership group than any other group, if you ignore technology, if you can't move into the current day's world, if you don't understand how things like email works and voicemail, if you're not in a position in the leadership roles, company officer or chief, of being able to electronic fill out a paper, patient care report rather, not paper, electronic, or a fire report. You know, I'm not suggesting that you have to become a geek, but by the same token, if you're Rip Van Winkle, if you've been sleeping for 20 years under the tree and you haven't kept up with any of the technology, you're in trouble. We have electronic pre-plans. We have electronic layers of data, whether it's fire hydrant data or drainage data, or where rivers are going to flow for hazardous materials, and having that basic understanding and applying yourself to having that technology background. It's critical nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I can say is it's going to get more important over time for us to be in a position to understand what that technology is.
Absolutely.
I had a chance to attend a seminar, and one of my true heroes and mentors at the time was the commissioner of the city of New York, Sal Cassano.
Mm-hmm.
And Sal, I wrote the quote down and I asked him, can I please use it again? And he allowed me. It was at a conference in the city of Boston. I was lucky enough to go in 2013. And he said, look, folks, I am not a technological genius, but I know and understand how technology is applied. And I understand the power of the technology for my department. And, you know, what a perfect thing to say. Had a person at his level, he probably could have ignored it and maybe gotten away with it because, again, I'm sure he's surrounded by great people. He's a great man, without a doubt. But
absolutely.
I thought to myself, he has got it. He's got the message. He understands.
Great leader.
Really and truly. And I'm so blessed to be able to call him a true friend. He was one of the participants, as you might recall, Steve, at Wingspread 6.
Mm-hmm.
And he truly carried the day in terms of some of the great discussion and leadership that he applied. The next one is pretty simple and straightforward, and that's illegal activities. Don't break the law. Pay your taxes. Make sure that you're in a position that the best discipline becomes self-discipline. You know, maybe it's a speeding ticket this week. Maybe it's a DUI the next week. Maybe it's domestic violence the third or fourth week. But that'll build up over time. And I don't know any department that will allow a member to be incarcerated and keep their position. And I'm not talking about waiting for a hearing or a trial. I'm talking about found guilty and put into a jail sentence, even if it's a week or a month or every other Sunday or something, whatever the system puts a person through. But if you break the laws, if you don't pay your taxes, kind of expect that there's going to be a problem, if you will. Physically striking somebody, lashing out at them, making threats and challenges, none of that's going to work. Of course, it'll be an organizational and professional embarrassment. We mentioned that in the opening as well. And I'm telling you, the media will cover it. I think they say, like a duck on a June bug. That's what they say down south for my pals down there. And, you know, even one brush with the law. Yes, sir. Even one brush with the law is probably going to equal that crusher that you're going to have to leave the organization, because the way that the story is going to lead is a firefighter from, a retired firefighter at, a former firefighter of. You mentioned it earlier. We are held to a higher standard, and we have probably the most power in society. I know we don't have guns and we can't put people in jail, but even the police can't enter a home without a search warrant. And under obvious fire conditions or medical, when we're asked or called, we have that authority. We do have a lot of authority in society. Therefore, we have to follow the laws of society. And unfortunately, you mentioned it earlier, the firefighter who gets caught lighting a fire, those kinds of things, it just will end up in some type of legal action against you.
Absolutely.
The next one I like talking about is having irreconcilable differences with your boss. You know, if you disagree with your boss in a general way, but when the boss says, here's the policy, here's the direction we're headed in, here's what our protocols are, here is our mission statement, and you don't like it, but you're not lashing out or making it into a deal, that's one thing. But when you cannot stand to be around the person, when it becomes a principled disagreement, most likely it's going to end up being a career crusher. And best thing you can probably do is to plan ahead. And again, if it's that direct and that simple and that important, and just get out before the getting goes away. I worked in an organization I won't mention. One week I was told to get rid of the deputy chief, and I asked why, and it was a cost-saving measure. A couple of more weeks later, I was told to release four brand-new firefighters who had just started in the organization, and I asked why, and they said it was a cost-saving measure. Couldn't do it, and ultimately, I knew that my time, my career light was dissipating, and before anything negative happened, simply because it wasn't going to go my way, I stepped aside. government was not going to support the fire department, even though it truly wasn't a financial issue. But philosophically, I absolutely, positively could not agree or get to a point to where I could support the direction that we were headed. So when you're at a complete impasse with your boss, either figure out a way to change bosses if you're low enough in the organization, and if you're at the top of the organization and you work for a mayor or just a few people above you, you might need to look for a whole new job.
I've been in that situation. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Do you mind telling our listeners, I'm going to play interviewer now, what happened? What was the circumstance and how did you recover from it?
I worked in nonprofit as like a chief operating officer. I saw my bosses doing things that were not to the benefit of the organization. I tried to sit with them. I invited them into my office and said, listen, you know, this is the situation. This is what I'm seeing from my side. If I'm wrong, please correct me. Tell me that I'm wrong, and I'd like to hear how I made my mistake. But if I'm looking at the right way, I just don't think this is healthy for the organization. And I have a board of directors that I have to answer to besides the two of you. And, you know, you don't leave me any recourse if we can't get this understood. And they made it perfectly clear that they were very happy where they were. So I understood that. And I made my plans to do what I had to do, because in my job in those nonprofits, my job was to take care of the nonprofit and the people in that organization, not to entertain one person or another. I had to look out for everybody. If they're not going to let me do that and they're doing things behind the scenes that the people can't see, I can't live with that. That wasn't my modus operandi. I had a lot of great work to do helping people in what they were doing, and I just had to take a leave, and that's what I did.
I made plans. How did it turn out in the long run?
Better for me.
Yep.
Better for me.
Yep. Almost always does. And again, I'm not suggesting that people ought to bounce around, but the ideal goal would be that you could figure out a way to get in line with your boss. And if you can't, man, that's just a tough day when you realize I can never get in line with this person.
Yeah, it is.
The next one kind of goes hand in hand with what we're describing. And simply put, you can't lie. You simply cannot lie. You cannot lie. Would you recall what the lead national story was on September 10th, 2001?
Oh, boy.
It was a story about a U.S. Congress member by the name of Gary Condit.
I remember him.
Gary Condit was from California. Gary Condit was a Democrat, I believe. Mm-hmm. Not that that really affects the story. And Congressmember Condit had a pretty significant presence in Washington because he was on a few of the higher, more prominent committees. Well, he had hired, or his staff had hired, a young lady by the name of Chandra Levy. Mm-hmm. And Chandra Levy, after leaving her college experience as an intern, became a full-time person there. And unfortunately, for all involved, Chandra Levy entered in a relationship that was inappropriate. The only problem with the relationship between her and her new boss was that he was married and his wife was 3,000 miles away. And it was pretty well known as the story unfolded. Well, as Chandra was exercising, staying in shape, running through Rock Creek Park, right. You know, my hometown is Washington, D.C., so that's our central park for our community. She was murdered. Condit, in essence, had nothing to do with her demise, but after a while and being questioned and being their boss, he continued to lie about the circumstances. As he described the fact that he either didn't know her or only barely knew her, of course, the FBI got involved. And they had all of those tapes where she was at the bank, at the gas station, at the movies, at the restaurants. Remember those closed-circuit televisions we talked about? the general's point well taken. Somebody is always watching. And ultimately, they charged him on September 10th, 2001, with her first-degree murder. And they did the perp walk. He had the ankle irons on and the hands cuffs, and they walked him into the Superior Jail in Washington, D.C. Now, reality of it was, he did not harm a hair on that girl's head. Right. However, between the lying and the inappropriate relationship, he lost his bid, re-election bid. Of course, his family disowned him. He became a businessman in Colorado. He actually was involved in some measure of food service, and that business went broke. And the last time that I was able to do any research on him, he pretty much had lost everything. Mm-hmm. Now, not that coming clean would have helped, but first of all, if he would have told the story the way it exactly was, the woman had taken up residence when he was in Washington, in his condo even. Her clothes was there. I mean, it was just an atrocity of him thinking that the police were that stupid, which they're not. They do like it when you think that they're stupid, by the way, so their job gets a little easier. And ultimately, by lying, that got him arrested. The arrest became so horribly public. Well, the rest is history. If there's anybody listening to our podcast this evening that has any police powers, that would be a fire inspector, that would be a fire investigator, that would be an internal affairs officer of a fire department. You don't want to be in a position called Brady listed or Lewis listed. It's spoken different in different communities as to which listing rather applies. And what that means is, in a very public way, whether it's been in a written public document or a public statement of record, you've lied. So your ability to testify in court about what you found during the fire investigation or what happened during the fire inspection or what you know that occurred during the internal affairs investigation, you become the focus and not your work. So anybody in those job roles that have police powers usually gets fired when they're Brady listed or when they're Lewis listed. You know, if you lie about one issue, you can pretty much guess that you can lie about all issues. So that's a direct and inconsolable difference with that public trust. Next, if you have a lot of political ambition, if your goal is to run for public office, you better look at all the laws and rules and organization requirements for that. There is a process that if you are politically engaged during a employment as a public employee, it's called the Hatch, H-A-T-C-H law. And if you violate the Hatch law, it's a federal law. But if you're being paid by public money and you decide to run for office, I do know of a police chief that ran in a community for mayor, and he lost the bid for mayor, and the incoming mayor immediately fired the chief. Mm. What a shock, right? What a shock. Committing any type of political suicide, again, violation of the Hatch Act, being openly committed to one party, saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, having partisan politics, I would have to say any of that's going to get you in serious trouble. And the last one, and maybe this is the most interesting one of all, that we experienced and we had to work through, and that's just pure incompetence, not the ability to be educated or not trained. But if you're incompetent, if you can't do the job, if you can't gain the skills, knowledge, and abilities, if you can't pass the minimum requirements, if you don't know what the NFPA series 1001, 1021, 1521 for safety officer, ultimately, you're probably not going to do well. You're going to look like that train wreck. You know, why did you watch it? Well, I just couldn't take my eyes off of it. Dumb will always be dumb, says Forrest Gump. But being incompetent, that might be the worst of the rules that we have discussed. So with that, that would be the things that in my career that I kept track of, that I tried to remember or remind members what not to do, that I put together a formal presentation to have an open and frank discussion to talk about. And I'm sure that there's many others, but I think those are the real headlines. Those are the banner issues. Those are the items that I would say, make sure that you don't do any of those 13. Oddly enough, it would be a listing of 13, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's fate. That's fate playing her hand. Well, you know, I think it is important. And you mentioned that hopefully you'll have a chart that you'll be able to send over to me, and we'll put it on your portion of the guest page that we have. And I hope that our listeners will not just listen to this podcast, but I hope either while they're listening or when they're done, they're going to go over to that page, the guest page, and look at that chart and get an idea of this is what they need to burn into their hearts and their minds. Because your mind is one thing you can understand and take in. But if your heart is not with that, listening to these 13 career crushers, and if you can't wrap your heart around how bad these are, then, you know, maybe it's time for change, you know, a different career choice.
And Steve, I just want to add, though, what we did is we took this information and it became a fire station poster. Are you with me?
Right.
And it was posted in every one of the firehouses. We're in the process of doing that now. I've been here for a total of 5 paychecks, so I'm relatively new. But if you'll take a look when you're ready in your email, it should start off zero tolerance. Zero tolerance for hazing, discrimination, harassment, workplace violence, physical or verbal abuse. And it ends with Chief Brunicini's motto, be nice.
Well, can't think of a better way to end a discussion like this, that there's always a way that we can do our job to the best of our ability if we choose to do so. And I would say, and probably you'd know better than me, but I'd say 99% of us do this job with our hearts.
Yes, sir.
And they understand these 13 principles. And they probably,
yes, sir, they do.
And they probably knew them before they even became firefighters, because it was instilled by their family, the values that they had, that allowed them to make this choice to become a firefighter. Because I think we're cut from a different cloth. We know that we do things that a lot of other people can't do. I just spoke this morning at a meeting I was invited to, and we talked about one of the videos from 9/11, when one of the crews got there with their, they were with, I believe, a deputy chief from the city, and they were all looking up at the top of the building, and he said, listen, guys, this is going to be a tough one. So if you guys... any of you want to take a pass on this, I respect that decision. Don't worry about it. Just be safe. And not a one stayed on the street.
Hmm.
Everyone went to the tower. That's the dedication that most of us come to the fire service with. And we have leaders like you to help guide us. And leaders like Chief Brunicini and all the other great leaders and mentors that we have to help guide us. Because we may slip along the way, but it doesn't necessarily mean we fall through the ice. We just may slip a little bit because we're human.
That's right.
And that's why the good Lord put erasers on the end of pencils, because we make mistakes.
Thank goodness for that, too.
Right, exactly. Well, Chief, I can't, again, thank you enough for your time, your wisdom, sharing it with us. We'll have all the chief's books, listings for his books on the website. And if you're interested, we have all his contact information. We'll give it to you one more time before we leave. You can reach him on Twitter at Chief Rubin. You can find him on Facebook at DC Fire, or you can contact him by email at chief-rubin@me.com. And I can tell you from my experience with the chief, he always answers the call. If it's an email, it's a text message, it's Twitter, he gets back to you. And that's the kind of leader that he is. So, Chief, thank you very much, not only for tonight, but for your service to the cities and the communities you've served and you've led. And just wish
I've been very lucky, very, very lucky, and it's great to have good friends like you. I think the work that's being done by Five Alarm Task Force is to be acknowledged and celebrated. Celebrated. Sorry, I apologize.
That's okay.
Celebrated is a much better word, obviously. And yep. So sorry, it's been a long day, and I got another long day tomorrow.
I plead not guilty.
Excuse, because I, I work really, really hard to be able to sound like I'm not a boob, but I guess when you get right down to it, I'm just that. But boy, you've done some amazing work. There's been some great presenters. This information is something that the American Fire Service needs. And again, you're found not guilty, but ultimately, thank you for the great work you do as well,
thank
my
you,
friend.
Thank you, Chief. Thanks. Be well. Folks, we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned.
Yeah, you, it's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa, what happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy. I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on. There's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses. But we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Ho, ho, ho! It's that holiday time again when many of us are trying to stretch every dollar to both purchase gifts for those we love and contribute what we can to the needy. This year, why not accomplish both by visiting the 5-Alarm Task Force storefront with our friends from Teespring? Just head over to our site at http://bit.ly/DalMattStore with a capital D, capital S, all one word, and choose from our several t-shirts, each with a different message on the back, or one of our emblazoned mugs. Both items come in multiple colors. The good folks at Teespring will wrap them all up and send it to the address of your choice. Once you've ordered your merchandise, you can be comforted by the thought that a portion of the net proceeds of all the merchandise sold is donated to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. This wonderful organization helps the families of those firefighters who have made the ultimate sacrifice. What a great way to spread some holiday joy for them. So purchase some Sharp 5-Alarm Task Force gifts and help a very special charity as well. From all of us at 5-Alarm Task Force, have a safe and joyous holiday season. Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments, and that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You'll be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who served their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer, sure. It takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. And that wraps this episode of 5-Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. We'd like to thank our guest, Chief Dennis Rubin, for joining us to discuss how to avoid a career crusher incident through your service. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and most podcast streaming services? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsor, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging training, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2018 Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we're bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at cause_origin, and on Facebook at /dalmatprod or dalmatprodfire. And stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, Dalmatian Productions, and our blog at our website, www.dalmatianproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, and let's make sure everyone goes home.